Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Charlie Long hanging out here. Happy to welcome in now Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champion, Saints pregame and postgame analyst. Scott, how have you been? I know it was a rough season, but we got some playoff football coming up to enjoy. And right now we are in the hunt for a new head coach. Just wondering what you've been seeing, you know, so far from this black and gold bunch. They've had interviews with Anthony Weaver, the Dolphins DC, also offensive coordinator of the New York Giants, Mike Kafka, and coming up, Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn. Lots of hot takes about this black and gold bunch right now going into all this, but just curious what you think so far of the names that have been connected with the black and gold.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting bunch. I mean, it covers the gamut of defensive specialists, offensive specialists, guys who have been head coaches before. So I think they're doing their due diligence. I mean, the only people that really know inside that building, I think the biggest question is, do we want somebody we're familiar with, or do we want a clean slate? I know probably a lot of the fans want a whole new clean slate. You know, Aaron Glenn, Joe Brady, guys who have been in the organization before, I think are excellent coaches. I think will be really good head coaches. But I think, you know, the way last season went, I think it makes more people feel like they need to have a whole new clean slate, which sometimes can be tricky. I think there's an advantage to knowing what you're getting in a guy. I mean, you know, Aaron Glenn was there for a number of years. He's probably the favorite because they saw him work every single day. They saw him after losses. They saw him work with players. And so when you wipe a slate clean, you don't necessarily know what you're getting until those moments happen.
You came into this organization 2006, obviously a big, huge change at the start of the Sean Payton era. Just you guys had a ton of success, though, in year one, 10-6, making the NFC Championship game. And just curious, what was the whole mentality, the feeling going in after this team had just suffered in 2005 a 3-13 season? I know you weren't part of that, but just that 2006 season, that feeling of a new head coach being in the building and just trying to build something special.
Yeah, I think for first and foremost, you noticed the number of new guys. It was the roster, I believe, was 46 new players out of 53. I mean, the entire roster was really turned over. We had mainstays still there, cornerstones of the franchise, Will Smith, Deuce McAllister, Charles Grant, guys like that, Ernie Conwell. So there were guys who were part of the organization, really good football players that welcomed new guys in. And so that was helpful, but you knew it was a whole new regime. You knew Sean Payton was going to do it his way, which he did, going to Jackson, Mississippi, grinding through those tough training camps. Practices during the week were brutal. So I think the one thing that the league has kind of gone back to as far as interviewing new coaches is they want the guys in the Sean Payton molds, a little bit of old school, bringing some toughness to the building, some accountability. Sean doesn't apologize for anything. He goes to Denver and he automatically says in his first press conference, hey, I don't know how it was done here in the past, but Russell Wilson's not going to have personal trainers in the building. I mean, that's how Sean Payton ran things. And so I think the league in general is trying to get back to that mentality instead of hiring these young guns. I mean, Ben Johnson probably factors into that, but you look at guys like Dan Campbell. Leaders of men is what the league has to focus on, because there's a lot of really good play callers out there, but that doesn't mean you can lead a group of men. And I think it takes a special talent to do that. And last point is, you know, Sean Payton, it wasn't like he was tearing up the NFL in offenses. I was with him in Dallas. We were okay on offense, but it wasn't revolutionary. But Sean was a leader, and I think that came out through his head coaching interviews. And I think that's the word the league goes to right now.
You know, Scott, when I look at some rankings, because there's six offseason head coaching vacancies between the Bears, the Raiders, the Jets, the Patriots, the Saints, and the Jaguars. A lot of the time you'll see the Saints kind of near the bottom, but I think one thing that people aren't really kind of taking into consideration, I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well, is, you know, organizational stability, I think, means a lot to some potential candidates. That, you know, you're not going to be a one and done if you get hired to be the next head coach of the Saints, like maybe you saw in Vegas. And Vegas has been a turnstile for head coaches recently, or what happened recently with Gerard Mayo with the Patriots. And it's happened almost every single year now where you've got these coaches that get their opportunity and then they're just gone after a single season. I think patience and stability is one of the main kind of calling cards that the Saints can offer any head coaching candidate.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I, you know, that kind of ties into what I was saying earlier about just wiping the slate clean, when, you know, a lot of fans want you know, want Mickey gone, or they just want everybody underneath Mrs. Benson to be replaced. And it all sounds good. And what that does is it gives you hope for a little bit that it's going to work. And it might work out. You never know. But to your point, when there's stability in an organization, head coaches, they know everybody's going to get fired at some point in the NFL, but they want to know that it's not going to be a one and done. They want to know that someone's going to put faith in them, allow them to turn it around, allow them to prove it. And just like getting hired as a head coach, I want to know that my GM has stability. I want to know that he's going to be there and not fired after a year because we have a losing season in my first season. So it all ties hand in hand. The owner has to have a great relationship with the GM. The GM has to have a great relationship with the coaches. And it just all trickles down to the players as well. And that's where I made that point many times, you know, covering the Saints and just saying, we're lucky. I know it wasn't a great season. It was a tough season to cover, too many injuries, but we're lucky because we cheer for, and I was a part of, and a lot of people are part of, a functional organization, an organization that just isn't dysfunctional. And I look at the Raiders, they're just firing people after 1 year. Those types of things are dysfunctional.
Yeah, real quick. I just want to kind of low light, I guess you would say, what's happened in Tennessee. I mean, that's just a perfect example. In 2022, you know, Mike Vrabel stays on. They fire John Robinson, the GM. All that goes back to what happened with A.J. Brown and not wanting to pay him. In 2023, they bring in Rand Carthon, the GM, with Mike Vrabel, but then they side with Rand Carthon and fire Mike Vrabel in 2024. But then after 1 year, or after, I guess, 2 years, 1 year after Mike Vrabel was fired, they move on from Rand Carthon. It's some of these organizations, and I just want to highlight this because it feels like it's a little bit underappreciated. Some of these organizations, they're just turnstiles for both coaching and GM, and dysfunctional is a great word for it, Scott. And I just think that the Saints don't get enough credit for, you know, how stable they really are.
There's no question. When a guy, a young guy or a free agent comes into the building, it was always a badge of honor to have them say, wow, it's different here. Wow, this is awesome. There's so much support. This feels like a family. Like that feels good. And that it hasn't been quite the same way the last couple of years. But I think winning always cures all. But, you know, you can never underestimate just like I said, when someone says you're a functional organization or that's a good organization to go play for, that means a lot of different things. That means, you know, the ownership is good. The general manager is good. And to your point, when you look at Tennessee, I mean, that was an organization a few years ago. They had Derrick Henry in the backfield. They had A.J. Brown. They had all these pieces. And the one thing that will never change about the NFL is you need great players to win games. And so you just start shipping away a bunch of great players. And we've had that discussion with the Saints roster. You know, everybody just says, this guy's too old or that guy's too old. They need to be traded. Well, you start getting rid of all these players. The cap looks a little better, but the performance on the field. And I think the biggest thing with this Saints team is just they have to look at something as far as the injuries. The injuries the last couple of years have just been absurd.
Yeah, talking about those injuries, the great start to this year was derailed by a bunch of those, and it's a team that will never know their full potential, what could have happened. But going into next year now, so they do have a lot of aging veterans at key positions on the roster, but what are some of the needs that you feel this team has to address going into next year? I know it seems like there's a whole lot of them, but I'm just curious, like your major positions you think need to be addressed going into 2025?
Yeah, you're right. As the season went along, I think the need list probably grew. You're like, wow, we need this. We need this. And it did. You kind of realize some of the areas you need more depth on or you need playmakers at. And listen, this offense, you're playing with your backup quarterback, your backup running back. You don't have either starting receiver for half the season. It's tough to win games. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, a lot of people would say offensive line, hope you get McCoy back. But I think there's a lot of teams in the league that would love to have two tackles at their age. Penning ended up being the biggest concern going into the season, and he played pretty well. Fuaga, they hit a home run on. So I think when you look at it in the draft, I think this team needs a defensive run stopper in the middle, a D tackle for sure. You can never have too many DBs, but some playmakers on offense. I don't really know if there's enough guys who are making plays in space. Kendra Miller has not been on the field enough for me to have a whole lot of confidence that he's going to be there week in and week out. So if you can strike gold with a great running back early in the draft to pair with Kamara, because you look at this NFC South, the Falcons have a good 1-2 punch. The Buccaneers have a good 1-2 punch. The Panthers do as well. So I think it's about fixing, getting more depth at the running back position, getting more playmakers on the offensive side of the ball.
It's a great draft to do it, Scott, because Mike and I are going to really do a deep dive into this draft stuff. But just early looking at it, the running back position is a strength of the 2025 draft. And it's really unfortunate because the Saints do have the number 9 overall pick, and they got it because Chicago won that final game against Green Bay. They leapfrogged them to number 10. but they went 5-10 and they're picking at 9. And so, you know, I went back and looked at it last year, Scott. I think 5-12 was what the Chargers were when they picked 5 and got Joe Alt, their franchise tackle. Yeah. So, but this year, 5-12, because the bottom of the league was so bad, you're only picking at number 9. Now, granted, this is still, you can still get a blue chip piece at pick number 9, but it's just like, oh man, it's really unfortunate because of what the league was this year versus last year, where, you know, a team that went 7-10, like the Falcons, was picking 8, 7-10 this year would have gotten you at least like 13.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, that's something I didn't realize. It's an outstanding point. I mean, usually when you only win 5 games, you'd like to think you have an opportunity to draft a future franchise quarterback. And I think that's kind of what's frustrating about this season is first of all, the draft is not that great for franchise quarterbacks. And, you know, do you sit there at 9 and 10 and 11 in that part of the draft where teams usually reach and end up, you know, getting bust at the quarterback's position? So I think the way the draft is going to unfold this year, the top 3 teams, those teams are all going to go after their quarterbacks. I don't know if the Saints, unfortunately, in a 5-1 season, you don't really reach for a quarterback in the first round. You're going to have Derek for another year. I think Spencer got a lot of great reps that a lot of fifth round picks don't get. There were flashes that he showed during that time. And the other thing you got to evaluate with Spencer is, heck, he's playing without his 2 starting wide receivers, his starting running back. But he got a lot of in-game experience, which is worth a lot. So probably not going quarterback like a lot of people would think with a 5-win season, but there'll be other years where I think the quarterback drafts will be better and you can get a franchise quarterback.
Scott, you obviously mentioned hitting on these draft picks is so key, but also retaining them. We've seen guys like a Trey Hendrickson having so much success in Cincinnati, and man, oh man, this year, curious your opinion on a guy like Zach Bond, the linebacker, just couldn't get on the field, didn't have as much success in New Orleans, and has just thrived with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know. I was saying this the other day to somebody. There's something about the Eagles and free agents going there and playing better. There's been a whole lot of teams where you sign free agents and they go and they played. Malcolm Jenkins, really, you know, his first 4 years with the Saints, he was a good player, but when he went to the Eagles and he became a Pro Bowler and really one of the best safeties in the league, and then obviously came back. But no, I think when you look at it, that is the frustrating part, because we can all point to, and I point to, the last 5 or 6 drafts, you haven't drafted 1 Pro Bowler, and that hurts. Over time, you know, it shows on the field. But then you look around the league, you see Alex Anzalone, the main piece of the Detroit Lions defense. You look at Hendrickson, like you said, leader, sack leader in the NFL. And you go around, and all these players are playing really well. Zach Bond, I mean, he was a player that they probably pegged to be something in New Orleans, never gave him an opportunity to be an off-the-ball middle linebacker. He goes to the Eagles, and Vic Fangio, to his credit, said, I see something in him. Let's give him the opportunity to do it, and becomes an all-pro linebacker. So, you know, sometimes coaches kind of peg you for something, and they don't really give you an opportunity to show what you can do. So credit to Zach and taking advantage of those opportunities. And the last thing with that is, you know, you have to really look at it from an organizational standpoint. Are we getting emotional and keeping guys too long and letting the other players go that we should be resigning? And I think those are the things you can point to with guys like Anzalone and Trey and Zach.
Great Scott, points. Before we let you run, I want to circle back around to what you're talking about, depth and the injuries that really kind of derailed this season. It feels like the good news for this upcoming draft is that the Saints didn't really make any trades that hurt their draft positioning for this upcoming season. In fact, trading Marshall and Lattimore, you had an extra 3rd and 4th round pick. I feel like these picks, especially day 2, are so, so important for this team to hit on because, you know, you got to build up that depth. I know day 3 is typically the depth picks, but you got to be able to hit, obviously, on pick number 9, but having an extra 3rd-round pick, an extra 4th-round pick, these are guys that could potentially be key contributors if you hit on them in the draft. So having all these picks and kind of being able to load up for at least, what is it now, 6 top, basically 130, 140 picks, I think will be huge for this team in the 2025 draft.
No, there's no question. And, you know, I've said this, if you're sitting there drafting at 9 and you really don't feel like there's nobody you're really in love with, and you can trade back into the teens and grab some more picks in the 2nd, 3rd round. I think this team is at that point where they have to do it. And fans don't like it, but that's how you build your teams, is through the draft. And you go back to the Saints in 2006 draft, what that draft meant to our run with Sean there and, you know, Jari Evans and Streif and all those guys, Colston. And then again in 2017, it gave you that run from 2017 to 2020 with that team. So you have to draft well. You can never have too many draft picks. And I always kind of laugh because after the first day, everybody kind of like, oh, who we draft? draft him. But that's where your franchise is put together, is in the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds. And you look at teams like the 49ers. They drafted Trey Lance. They went all in, a pretty functional organization. They realized they were wrong. But, you know, fortunately for them, they drafted Brock Purdy the same year. So there's a lot of players that, even though they're being drafted in the hundreds and the 200s, you're just lucky enough that if you do your research and your homework and they can turn into pros, that's how you turn your franchises around.
Always appreciate your time, Scott. You back in Dallas, Texas right now?
Yeah. It's a winter wonderland in Dallas right now.
I was going to say, we're complaining about 46 degrees here. I know you're dealing with snow.
Yeah, it's all right, though. I grew up in Nebraska, so snow, I live in the South for a reason, because I don't want to do this all the time, but every once in a while, it's kind of nice to look out the window and see.
Always appreciate the time, Scott. Have a good one. Be talking to you soon.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Who dat? Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, Saints pregame and postgame analyst.